Thanks for that introduction, Sally. I'm actually not going to be talking about biosolids. I'm talking about urban subsurface residuals, which a lot of you might be wondering, what in the world are those? Basically, that's just a fancy way of saying drilling mud. But I'm not talking about drilling mud from the oil and gas industry. What I'm talking about is a byproduct from the horizontal directional drilling process. This is a non-invasive trenchless technology. Essentially, you're horizontally drilling boreholes for installation of utilities such as water, sewer, gas, electric, fiber optic, etc. A rig can be seen here. That's a small rig. It can be much bigger. The problem with HDD mud disposal is the people in the industry look at it like this. It's just clay and water and all fun and games. Unfortunately, the public sees it differently. They see it like this. There's no distinction between the oil and gas industry and the HDD industry. It's kind of a branding issue, somewhat to like biosolids to sewage sludge. It's a name problem. The disposal is becoming very expensive for the industry, and it's costing the industry lots of money. This is why we're doing this study. So what's in the mud? Your basic mud is just water, cuttings, and soil from the borehole. Depending on what type of formation you're boring through, it may contain some additives to aid in the drilling process. Some possible additives are bentonite or montmorillonite, used for lubricating and bore wall stabilization, polymers for friction reducer, soil conditioning, soda ash for pH control, and surfactants used to disperse clay particles. Some objectives of the research: A, is to characterize the mud both chemically and physically to get an idea of what we're looking at. B, do a field study to determine the impacts that different application rates may have on overall yield and seed germination. And ultimately, to determine if land application is a viable option for disposal. We wanted to get a good characterization. Oops. There we go. All right. We wanted to get a good overall characterization of the mud, so we wanted to get samples from all over the U.S. We ended up getting 56 samples from 28 different states. We had two from Alaska that you can't see on this map. And we tested each sample. We tested the solid portion and the liquid portion separately. This is what we did to characterize the mud. We basically got the percent solids, took the pHEC of both the mud and the water portion of the samples. We did a total digestion of the solid portion. We did a Malic 3 extraction from all the solid portions. We tested for water-soluble metals in the water portion. And we also analyzed the solids for total nitrogen, total carbon. These are my EC and pH results. As you can see, the maximum EC found was just under the 4,000 level for a saline soil. And again, we're looking at this to be used as a land amendment. So these higher values really are not that much of a concern. And the pH looks just like a typical soil pH. We compared our solids digestions. We looked at heavy metals, and we compared them to just typical levels found in soils. And as you can see, we have 7 total samples that fall out of this normal or typical range. And here we're looking at the same heavy metals compared to typical levels found in Oklahoma soils. And obviously those levels differ a little bit from the national average, and we have 15 total that fell outside that range. I will say that every sample that I analyzed came in below the EPA 503 standard for exceptional quality biosolids. Okay, for the liquid portion, again, we were looking at metals. There is no definite measuring stick to use, so we wanted to find the strictest one that we could find. So we use the EPA criteria for aquatic life. Again, this is for surface water, not for soils. And it's a very, very strict criteria. As you can see, for the four of the five metals sampled, four of the five were below, all of them, 100% of the samples were below the criteria, and a little over 50% busted the limit for cadmium. But the cadmium limit for this particular criteria is 2 micrograms per liter, and again, that's for surface water. We also looked at SAR. As you can see, the majority of my samples came in well below that 13 mark for sodic soil. We did have a couple that were fairly high, but again, for using this for a soil amendment, it's not a whole lot to worry about. As far as my survey conclusions, I personally might not would use it as a potting soil to grow my tomato plants in. But for a soil amendment, it's looking very safe. Just for an example, I took my highest level of copper at almost 1,900 milligrams per kilogram. And if we were to spread that on a soil with a residual of 40 milligrams per kilogram copper and applied at the highest rate of 100 tons per acre, if you combine that with a 6-inch acre furrow slice, that would only bring up your concentration to 226 milligrams per kilogram copper. And that's only a little over 7% maximum EPA soil screening levels for residential soils. We also did a land application study. We did two of them. One of them just representing a typical Bermuda pasture field. The other, we wanted to represent a construction site, so we removed the first layer of soil. And for my cover plots, we mowed prior to application. We measured the total biomass in tons per acre, and we're going to measure the tissue for metals, even though very unlikely that we have any there. And for both sets of plots, we took samples at days 0, 7, 30, and 90, and we did a saturated paste extraction, tested for EC, tested the pH, and also did a metallic 3 extraction. For my bare plots, we seeded with Bermuda seed prior to application of the mud, and we measured percent cover at day 30 and at day 60. And we did apply based on total solids because we had nothing limiting us chemically. We applied at 6 different rates, representing, including the control, representing 0, 20, 40, 60, 80, and 100 tons of solid per acre. And we calibrated those rates using the percent solids of the mud being applied with a particle density of dry soil. Here we are applying to my covered plots. This is the highest rate of 100 tons per acre. And we'll see we got that upper limit from the Oklahoma Corporation Commission's upper limit for the land applying of oil and natural gas drilling mud. This is an entire rep after application. As you can see, the one furthest towards the bottom there is the highest rate next to a lower rate. And then this is just 5 days afterward. We had received about a third of an inch of rain. You can still see, it's the exact same rep, you can still see the outline of that higher rate, but the others you can't even see. We did measure biomass after 120 days. The means were not statistically different, so even though this is a nice little curve graph, it doesn't really mean anything. For my bare plots, like I said, we scraped off the layer of topsoil first. Then we seeded each rep. And this is an entire rep directly after application. You see it's a little soupy. And this is just 2 days after application. This is a panoramic of all three reps. You can pick out the higher rates from the, where it's still wet here. I believe up in here. And then this is approximately 120 days after application. The Bermuda came in very nice. We have a different version of PowerPoint, apparently. We did measure cover at day 60. We did not irrigate the reps. We measured using a camera and sample point software, which is a pixelation software, and it's 100 pixels per picture, and you determine whether there's cover or not. If you, my A, B's, and C's were here, you would see that my lowest rate of 20 tons per acre was significantly different than the control and all the other application rates, and my highest rate of 100 tons per acre was significantly lower than the control. So, in conclusion for my land application studies, there was no significant chemical change in the soil for all rates on both my covered and my bare plots. There was no significance in yield on my covered plots. And as I just said, on my bare plots, the 20 tons per acre significantly higher than the control and other rates, and the 100 tons per acre significantly lower than the control. So in summary, for the chemical and physical characterization, the solids portion, there were no harmful amounts of heavy metals found at all. All samples fall below that EPA 503 heavy metal criteria for exceptional quality biosolids. And the water portion, cadmium was the only constituent found above the EPA criteria for aquatic life. Again, that is a criteria for surface water, not for soil. As far as the field study goes, no significant difference in biomass yield, no significant chemical change after application. Possibly aids in germination of Bermuda seed at the lower rate of 20 tons per acre, and it possibly hinders germination or smothers the seed at the higher rate of 100 tons per acre. In the end, we've concluded that the land application is a viable option for disposal. And that's all I've got. Any questions? Yes.
I wonder.
You mainly looked at chemical changes. I wonder if there would have been some soil physical changes due to the land application.
I don't think that any, at least soil physicists I know, said that you cannot change the texture of a soil. I think there might be some sort of water holding capacity difference. And I think that in the lower rates, that's actually going to help with the one of my bare plots in particular. I think that's why we saw the difference in that lower rate.
So at the end, you concluded that there were no harmful amounts of metals found, but you also said that you wouldn't recommend using this for potting soil. So Okay. Could you elaborate on that, why you wouldn't?
Okay. Well, significant metals in the fact for land application. I might not would want to concentrate it all as a medium for planting a tomato plant in, because there were no metals were actually above the limits that I did compare them to. There were still some metals there. There are metals in all soils, but when you use it as a when you land apply it, you're mixing it with the soil in situ, so somewhat, for lack of better words, diluting it.
So when you have it as a potting soil, wouldn't a lot of these metals even just leach out of the container? I'm not a soil person, so I don't know these things.
Metals are usually not leachable.
No,
they're usually chelated with organic matter, what have you. Cadmium might be the only exception to that.
So I didn't catch what soil type you applied this on, and if you would suggest are there limitations in different textural types for applying this to?
We haven't looked at applying to different texture types. This I applied to just a basic loamy soil, typically found in Oklahoma. We have not tried it on. Actually, we have an experimental plot we did for a field day. We have no data from yet. It was more of a sandy loam. We are going to do the water holding capacity. We're going to test for that, but we're going to do that at a later date. I don't have that data yet.
I'm just wondering, you've showed us that it's probably not harmful to apply this to soil, but what motivation, other than being paid by the person needing to dispose of this stuff, would a landowner have to apply it to their soil?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it might hold, it might increase the water holding capacity of the soil. If a farmer has a sandy loam, he might want some extra clay to hold that water. It's a very good question. I mean, we're not that far into it yet. They basically wanted to do this study to kind of put a bridge the gap between the oil and natural gas mud versus the HDD mud. Oil and natural gas, I will say, oil and natural gas industry, they do pay for people to dispose of mud on their land. So, very good question.
Following up on his question,
mm-hmm.
You're applying a smectitic clay material.
Okay.
Have you considered not just the physical characteristics, but the cation exchange capacity, which would help maybe answer his question of that clay and your heavy metals that are cations?
Okay, repeat the question one time. Sorry, I don't.
Okay.
Follow.
Your smectitic clay, your
mm-hmm.
drilling mud,
mm-hmm.
has a relatively high cation exchange capacity.
Sure.
Which would probably limit the movement of those heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're dealing with, at the high levels anyway, you might be dealing with altering chemical properties as well as physical properties.
In the soil itself or in the clay particles?
Particle size. Well, not just the particles, but if you've got a sand,
mm-hmm.
relatively inert material if it's pure sand, and then you're mixing it with a material that has something on the order of a 10 times plus cation exchange capacity per unit mass.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have some other things that are changing too chemically.
Yeah, you might would, but if you're land applying this, you're going to have organic matter involved as well. I think that's going to counteract that.
I'm not an expert on drilling muds, but the oil drilling muds that I've had experience with have always been very high in barium,
mm-hmm.
so that it's go down the hole well and give it weight. I suspect this material you worked with was low in barium.
Yes, it was.
It might be an important differentiation to try to get these separated out as different chemical materials.
No, that's a very valid point.
All right, thank you, Joshua. Mm-hmm.